This is It's Not In Your Head podcast with Dan and Jez. Dan is a doctor and Justine a pain coach. We've come together to find ways to manage complex chronic pain better for both patients and providers. Welcome to another episode of It's Not In Your Head with Justine Feitelson and Dr. Dan Bates. Today, we're excited to go over the different types of pain with you. Dan, can you explain the different types of chronic pain and how you explain these to your patients as well?
Okay, great. So there's three types of pain. So there's what we refer to as nociceptive pain, neuropathic pain, and then nociplastic pain. Now, they're stupid names, but let's just work through them. So nociceptive pain is essentially body part pain. Neuropathic pain is nerve pain. And nociplastic pain basically feels like body part pain and nerve pain, but it's amplified by the nervous system. So nociplastic pain, the way it feels is it's an ache, sharp, dull, pressure, tends to be throbbing. Some people just go, oh, it's just sore, Dan. It tends to be focal, tends to be intermittent. It tends to be proportional. So little injury, little pain, big injury, big pain. It has specific things that make it better, and it's specific things that make it worse. It then has features to it. So if there's inflammation involved, it's worse in the morning, improves your warm up, worse as you cool down, associated with stiffness, goes away a little bit with anti-inflammatories. If there's muscle involved, you get muscle tightness and trigger points. If you've got bone involved, it wakes you in the middle of the night and gives you pain on impacts, like if you stand on it. If you've got something that's broken or busted within it, it gives you painful clicking, clunking, instability. That type of pain tends to come on when you load it and then when it goes away. And then if you've got blood vessels involved, you get pain on exercise that goes away quickly at rest. So neuropathic pain, which is nerve pain, that type of pain tends to be in the distribution of the nerve that's involved. Okay. So that might be a peripheral nerve. So it might be just in a little focal area over your foot. It might be at a nerve root and cover like a big chunk of your leg, but like the back of your leg, but not the front of your leg. Or it might be at a spinal cord or a brain level, which then means it covers a much wider area of pain.
Right.
It tends to be waxy and waning. So it'll get worse and get better and get worse and get better and has intermittent random spikes. Features wise, it tends to be either burning, pins and needles, numbness, itching, crawling, painful cold, painful squeezing, or just a bunch of like really weird symptoms that don't make sense, like the sensation of having, you know, water running down over your leg.
Yeah, right.
Nociceptive pain is, it either feels like body part pain or nerve pain, but it's an amplification of both of them. So the pain goes from being intermittent to constant. It goes from being proportional to disproportional. So you get little injury, big pain. Specific things that make other things better and worse, everything just makes this thing worse. It then has other associated features. So you also get other sensory sensitization. So you don't just have amplification of pain, you get amplification due to light. So you get sensitive to light, sensitive to sound, which gives painful, like loud noises. People don't cope with loud noises.
Right.
You get sensitive to smell. So it gives a lot of nausea type problems. And they're the most common sensory stuff. But it's probably far broader than that when we look at that. And we'll get into that a little bit further. You also get associated fatigue. You get sleep disturbance. So people can't sleep or they wake up all the time. You get brain fog. So you can't think. And so the way I think about that is that if someone's yelling at me all the time, it makes it very, very difficult to think. And so if your pain system's yelling at you all the time, it makes it very, very difficult to think.
You're distracted.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally, you get other organ symptoms. So you might get your heart might race, which is associated with things like POTS. You might get a lot of gastrointestinal dysfunction. So we kind of label that as IBS type symptoms. You might get bladder symptoms. So you get, you know, chronic bladder syndrome, et cetera, et cetera. So there are three components. And when we get into nociceptive pain, the thing that probably drives it is a concept called central sensitization. And it is really complicated. Yeah. And hopefully we'll be able to break it down for you and you'll be able to see it. But today, what we're dealing with is we're talking about the easier stuff, which is nociceptive pain.
Thanks a lot, Dan. That was a really good overview of the different aspects of pain and why you can see it is pretty difficult to treat and tease out and pull apart from a physician standpoint what the patient is presenting with, when by the time Dan sees them, oftentimes they have involvement of all three types of pain, right? Or it's definitely not just one. And if it is just one, and if it is just peripheral or nociceptive, that certainly makes it a lot easier because it's that component of central sensitization. Yeah, that really provides a challenge and is the piece where patients can get lost. And so we're going to focus more on nociceptive pain today, but we'll certainly circle back and dive really deep into those other components that are very common and very significant with our population. So looking back at nociceptive pain, can you kind of break down, Dan, what is the difference between somatic and visceral under that umbrella?
Okay, so somatic pain is body part pain. You can split your body parts into somatic. Somatic, soma means body, basically. Right. And you can think of it like, I'm just thinking about arms, legs, backs, heads, stuff.
Yeah.
Visceral is then like it sounds, it's your viscera. So it's gastrointestinal tract. It is liver, kidney, heart, lungs, those sort of things. So the thing that is different with them is that with somatic pain, you are generally able to localize it. So, and the reason why you can localize it is not because our pain system is very good at localizing things. So our pain system is not very good at localizing pain. But let's say you stub your toe, all right? You get a pain signal that goes to your brain and says, like, that hurt. But also what you get is you get touch, pressure, vibration at the same time. And so what your brain does is your brain puts all those signals together. And so when it puts all those signals together, it can go, ah, I got a pain signal and I got a bunch of other signals that came from my big toe. I'll tell him the pain's in his big toe. And that's how your brain puts it together.
It localizes it.
And so what happens with visceral pain is visceral pain tends to be more diffuse. Right. And so most people are aware of like cardiac pain. So heart pain gives you pain in your chest and it then radiates down your left arm. So your heart is here, like it ain't very big.
Right.
But what it lacks is it lacks touch, it lacks pressure, it lacks vibration. So what your brain is getting a signal of like, ouch, like it's getting nociception. So nociception is the nervous system signal up to your brain, and your brain then turns that into pain. And so it gets a nociceptive signal from your heart, but it gets nothing else. And it's like, what's in about this area? I'll tell them it's like here-ish.
Right.
And you can work it out from there. And your liver and your kidneys do essentially the same. So your brain will go, it's about there. Not that you can see my hand, but that'll give you a broad area of pain because it lacks the ability to localize it.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. How would you say, when we went over the different components too of neuropathic pain and or elements, right, of bony, inflammatory, et cetera, how does being able to pull that information out from the patient as well as, right, is this somatic or visceral? Is there any combination of the two help you then narrow in how are we treating this and, you know, getting to the bottom of their presentation?
Yeah. So let's put it in the context of my practice. My practice is dominantly somatic pain. I see a little bit of chronic visceral stuff, but I don't see tons.
Is it just much less common, Dan?
If you look at the stats around chronic pain, so 20% of the world suffers chronic pain. 70% of that is lower back. The next 20% is joint pain, so which is essentially osteoarthritis. So that's 90% arms, legs, and backs. Right. Next 8% is neuropathic pain, and the last 2% is everything else. And so as a result, like if you're seeing people with long-term pain, you're probably going to be seeing people with, you know, back, neck, and joint pain, surprise, surprise.
Which is where some of the challenges come in when you see so few, not Dan, but so few of the 1, 2% of chronic pain. The CRPSs, the EDSs, the weird stuff. So
Which aren't a massive amount of pain patients, but it is a massive problem because it's hard to treat.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2% of 20% of the world is still a very large number of people. So when we look at nociceptive pain, you're looking for its features: sharp, dull, pressure, throbbing. Okay, so that just kind of tells you that it's nociceptive. Then you're looking to see, is it, like, where is it? And so, is it focal? So I am wanting focal pain. If I can have somebody that comes in with focal pain, that means that I can then put some local anesthetic around the nerve supply to what I think it is, and I can see if I can take away that pain. And that gives me a diagnosis.
Right.
The other thing within nociceptive pain is it has generally will have specific things that make it better and specific things that make it worse. And so if you're talking about something like back pain, you'll be looking for something, you know, you've got pain on sitting, going sit to stand, rolling over in bed, feels better when you cross your legs, gets worse when you're going downstairs. Okay. If that's what someone's presenting with, I'm starting to think that they've got sacroiliac joint pain. They've probably got sacroiliac joint instability or dysfunction in that setting. It's probably a better word for it.
Yeah.
If someone comes to me and they've got, you know, pain on standing that's worse on extension and twisting, I'm going to start thinking that that's a joint pain. Alternatively, if I've got somebody that comes in and they've got pain that hurts when they bend forward, hurts when they bend back, hurts when they sit, hurts when they stand, hurts when they walk.
No matter what.
Okay. Now I'm starting to think that this person's got nociplastic pain because everything hurts and they've got central sensitization going on. So the specific things that make it better and worse allow me to, like, better guess. And that's what we're doing at the moment. We're still guessing during history or predicting
narrowing
it down to what it should, what you think it's going to be.
Likely culprits, yeah.
So the step after that is that then you're looking at its features. So you get inflammatory features, you get myofascial features, which are essentially muscle involvement.
Yeah.
You get bony features, which are bone involvement. You get mechanical features, which in my setting, the way I think about them is, you know, clicking, clunking, instability. And then you get vascular features, which is also known as claudication. So how does that help? What that does to help me is that if you've got inflammatory features, so it's worse in the morning, proves you warm up, worse you cool down, associated with stiffness, goes away a little bit with anti-inflammatories. Okay, great. We can look at anti-inflammatories as a means of trying to control your pain.
Right.
The other thing that's important with that that we look at a lot of the time is the stiffness and how stiff somebody is in the morning and for how long. Okay. So there's two pieces with stiffness. If it lasts for greater than an hour, that kind of fits into this, what we refer to as a yellow flag. I'm starting to think about, does my patient have an inflammatory disorder? And if they do, I'm going to send them off to see my friendly neighborhood rheumatologist and get them to give their input. The other thing about stiffness is that if that's the primary problem. So a lot of time people get sent to me with pain, but what they get sent with is actually, Dan, pain doesn't hurt, it doesn't bother me so much, but geez, I'm stiff. Like I'm really over the stiffness. Okay, boom. Yeah. You're going to go see a rheumatologist. And so that's what, by teasing that out, that's what it gives me. Okay. When you get to myofascial pain, so myofascial pain is muscle tightness and trigger points. So a lot of the time people say, I see my physio, I see my masseur, I see my physical therapist, I see my chiropractor. It feels good for 2 to 3 days and then my pain comes back. Okay, so what's happening there is the patient has secondary muscle tightness due to an underlying problem. So let's say that you've got facet joint arthritis that irritates those. So Jazz has got her wiggles going on.
It's my wiggles, I know.
This is part of her. This is kind of the movement techniques that she'll use. So she can
unofficial movement technique.
Managing the bits that hurt.
Yep. Anyone, anytime you need to take a stretch break during our podcast, highly encouraged.
Yeah, everyone stand up, wiggle around. Jazz is wiggling. It's time for
putting on the vibration. We're good. All right. Sorry, Dan. Continue.
No, you're good. No, that's good. But I think that, you know, this is the stuff that we need to, like, everyone needs to see how you do it because, like, you're highly functional. And let's copy. Like, from my perspective, it's kind of interesting from my side because Justine and I have been sitting online talking for like 6 months now. And so I'm really comfortable with she needs to move to get on top of her pain at the moment. No big deal. Let's keep going. And if you're in a meeting and you know somebody that's got significant pain and they need to wiggle, let them wiggle. Go for it. Let them move. Let them lay down on the ground. I'm sure we'll have some laying on the ground as we do this podcast as we go. Anyway, so we're back to myofascial pain. We'll get there. So myofascial pain is in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases with the patients that I see is a secondary issue. And yes. So if that secondary issue is a major component of their pain, and it can be, particularly with when you've got a nerve irritation, releasing those muscles out, doing some dry needling on them, making them feel better, think that's a good part that you can use those techniques to manage pain. The other thing, though, that I see myofascial pain as a signal that the patient is weak. And so if you've had pain for a long time, you get deconditioned, those muscles get wasted. Firstly, they don't work properly. Secondly, they get wasted. And thirdly,
inhibited and then wasted.
Down the track, they get infiltrated with fat, and so they get inflamed. They don't work properly.
Yeah, and then you squirm in your chair.
Setting, so in that setting, when you've got lots of muscle tightness, the treatment option is to get stronger. So we have to get on top of your pain, and then we have to get you stronger, because like repeatedly just dry needling and massaging doesn't end up working.
No, it's a vicious circle too, right? Because your fascia also is constricting and creating those trigger points and adhesions because your muscles lack the stability to create the strength they need to for you. So because they're weak and inhibited, you get in this vicious cycle of weakness, spasm, on and on and on.
Yeah.
So it makes it really challenging. Yeah.
So the next part of nociceptive pain is bony pain. So bony pain is it wakes you in the middle of the night and it gives you pain on impact. So impact is really hard to define in many cases, but in someone's back, it's hard to identify. In your sacrum, you can see it. So you get patients with sacral insufficiency fractures. So that's basically someone who's got osteoporosis and they're part of their pelvis just breaks because you walk on it. Those patients, what they do is they present with, when they sit down, their pain just goes away. They are 100% pain-free. They stand up and they are in agony. And it's actually quite hard to diagnose because they come in with such severe pain in the story. And it's not until you go, well, do you have any periods where you have no pain? They go, oh yeah, it's gone when I sit, like zero. I'm like, okay, now we're thinking about, and if it's over their sacrum, and the next piece of impact is if you push on it. So there's a bunch of bones you can't push on. There's some bones you can't push on. If you push on.
Impact can mean like weight bearing and pressure, right? Weight bearing.
And so if you push on a sacral insufficiency fracture, they really hurt. It doesn't like you very much, but it gives you a diagnosis. And you see the same thing for those people who have had stress fractures in your feet. You see the same sort of thing, you know, might give you pain in the middle of the night, but you got to load it. Like you get off it, feels okay, but you walk on it and it starts to hurt. So that's pain on impact. The next part is then mechanical pain. And so within the setting of mechanical, I think of painful clicking, clunking, instability. And so where a lot of the time we use the term mechanical to mean I load it and the pain hurts and I get off it and the pain goes away. I don't find that specifically useful. Like, the patient's got mechanical pain. But yeah. Right. Like, which bit? Great. Now which body part hurts? So we're still, we haven't jumped anywhere. So if you've got painful clicking and clunking, I'm going to then be starting looking for tears, loose bodies, things along those lines that will then give me a way to go look at. And I'm going to be starting to pay more attention in that setting, particularly to scans, because I'm going to be looking for what's torn on the scan and what's, you know, what loose bodies are floating around, et cetera, et cetera. And similarly, if you've got instability of joints, I'm going to be looking for what's torn. And if you're really stretchy, you get a joint instability due to other reasons.
Right.
But, you know, same thing. So it helps me with directing my diagnosis. Sorry, go.
I was just going to say, is this one of the contexts where imaging is particularly helpful in comparison to other contexts? Right, as a patient, you often want, understandably so, I want imaging, but it's not always helpful for good reason, not because the doctor doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, right. A lot of the time, unfortunately,
it depends on these factors.
Super helpful. It's got to match up with your symptoms. And if it doesn't match with your symptoms, well, then the imaging's not useful. other than to say you've got something there, but it doesn't hurt. The last type, what's last component to nociceptive pain is it gets worse on exercise and goes away quickly at rest. So that is vascular pain. And what you're thinking about in that setting is you're thinking about, have you got a vascular occlusion of some sort? And that tends to be, you tend to get that in the distribution of whatever artery you're dealing with. And so it's not common, but you do see it. And it's one of those things that I ask for in the, you know, am I going to find it? But most of the time it's not there. Now, when you do find it, great. It directs what you've got to do. That's where you're going to send them off to your friendly neighborhood vascular surgeon, and you're going to say, please sort this out, because it's a very, all of a sudden, like this pain that comes on that's over an entire leg,
right,
ends up being,
but it's not under your umbrella,
which is really treatable with like a vascular stent or femoral artery bypass. Like, easy, get on with it. So.
Yeah. So even if it's not under the physician's scope, being able to identify these pieces and then properly refer to the aspect which is painful is really, really helpful.
Yes. And so from a nociceptive perspective, that's how I sort of bring all those features together. And, you know, that's what my, like the majority, because the majority of people come to see me with nociceptive pain. You know, if you come in with neuropathic pain, you tell me you've got burning, pins and needles, numbness, itching, crawling, painful cold. Like, easy. I just got to work out what nerve it's in and what's causing it. But nociceptive pain is harder. Like, it's because it's a little bit more vague and it's got more features to it. And so that's what I spend most of my time trying to work my way through, unless it's, you know, and then they've got nociplastic stuff on top, which is like the amplifier. And it's like anything, you amplify anything, then it gets harder to work out what it is. And just like, because we haven't stepped into this yet, but if you think about, if you look at what we describe as pain as a sound system, have a look at that talk I do it as a talk a lot of the time. But if you look at that podcast, the way I think about amplification in this setting is that if I've got a speaker in the room, and that speaker is turned down low, what's going to happen is I'm going to be able to go, oh, yeah, it's over there. And so if it's over there because it's turned down low, no problems, because my ears can differentiate which direction the sound is coming from.
Right, where is it coming from?
Yeah, yeah. If you turn up that speaker to it's like really loud, what happens is that it then starts to sound like it comes from everywhere. And so your ears get the signal and your brain then goes, I can't tell where it is. I was going to tell him it's coming from everywhere. And so with nociceptive pain, it's the same. When you've got these pain signals or these nociceptive signals going into the brain and they are really, really, really loud, then your brain starts going, oh, I don't know where it's coming from. I'll just tell him it's in this area or this area.
Yeah.
Or, you know what, I can't tell. I just tell them it's all over their body. You can work it out, you know. So that's kind of how I think about that. I think about the speaker turned up really, really loud. But anyway, we will talk about that in more detail in nociceptive pain.
Yeah, but that's why when people have extreme, you know, you look at them and you think, oh, that person can't be in as much pain as they say. They can, because their speakers got turned way, 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 way up. So it's not the original pain itself. It's once that 2 is turned up to a 20, right, that driver, that then you have components of central sensitization, a lot more of a challenging situation.
Yeah. But nociceptive pain, we'll get into it. Nice. Bring that on.
On one hand, easier and more straightforward, but challenging because a lot of different things cause it, as opposed to neuropathic, which is a little bit more specific in driver, right? So we'll get into more sort of diagnoses and algorithms around how Dan works out, even like knee, ankle, back, right? Sort of specific body part pain, nociceptive driver episodes. But we also wanted to get into a little bit under the nociceptive umbrella of the different challenges both patients and providers face in this communication. Because you can see how Dan's trying to get a history from the patient that helps him kind of solve a puzzle. and the patients often coming into the interaction thinking, I need to get this person to understand how much I hurt sometimes instead of right how or where or the specifics Dan's trying to figure out. And it's not that Dan doesn't care how much you hurt, but he already knows, you know, it's because of the amplification or whatever. And he's trying to get to the more specific diagnostic piece around sometimes what the patient can communicate. Also because people feel pain differently. We have different tolerances for pain. We use different words to describe pain. You'd think it's one person squeezing isn't another person squeezing. So that can also make it a little harder for Dan to understand what exactly the patient is saying and where exactly their pain is coming from.
Yeah. So would you agree that is, yes, I think what, like, and this is really, I think this becomes the split between, you know, doctors and patients a lot of the time. So doctors,
yes,
patients will need to come in and tell me how bad the pain has made their life, which is really important. And in many ways for me, the piece of information I get out of that is I need to do something about this for this patient. Okay. If someone comes in and says, you know what, it bothers me, but not that much. I'm like, you know what? We're not going to risk doing procedural stuff on you if you're effectively coping with it. But if somebody comes in, they need to tell me how bad it is. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't tell me, it doesn't give me information about how to work out what's causing the pain. So what I need,
like in that whole list you went through, Dan, of the different right aspects of the subtypes, nowhere in there was how much does it hurt?
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately.
Yeah. And so what I need to know is I need to know where it is and what does it feel like? And then what other features has it got? So what that allows me to do is come up with a diagnosis. And then I can come up with a diagnosis and treat it, which then helps us deal with how much it's like making your life bad. But how much it makes your life bad doesn't tell me what or where, which is like gets really difficult. And what happens is that people think we're not listening. We are listening. Yes. We just need different information to listen to, which is
totally. And this is the classic misunderstanding between patients and providers. And I think if we can help people understand, right, why is my doctor asking me certain things and why is he just trying to get to the root of certain things? Because those things are priorities in him trying to help me. And it's hard also as a patient when more and more of these types of pain or specific issues up, and it's not one type of nociceptive driver that you're trying to explain and express, and Dan's trying to tease out in 45 minutes.
Yeah. So, all right. So
the more specific we can get.
Let's keep going to other challenges, because it's kind of interesting as you're like a ranger. I start thinking about what my other challenges are. So this first challenges are then going to be, where's the pain? Now, people find it very difficult to actually identify where their pain is. And so what I do is I use a couple of different techniques. And number one, I ask the patient to draw their pain, but I have a very specific way that I want them to draw it. You can't like just go on and go and like grabbing a pain diagram and going, it's there and it's there. Like it doesn't help. So we take them through a specific way to draw it. Then what I'll get patients to do is, because they struggle to move like their body to a body chart, you then get them to point at it. Okay, great. So that you've drawn it there. Can I get you to stand up and point to where your pain is for us? And so you then want to be able to go through that process of identifying, are they pointing to the same bits that they've drawn? And so when they haven't, I had this happen like literally yesterday. That's really where a guy draws his pain below his belt line and I got him to stand up and point to it. And it was his shoulder, but it was like a well and truly above his belt line. And so that completely changes the diagnosis.
Right.
And
so
it actually made it much easier.
It's almost like an eyewitness testimony to a crime, Dan. It's not very dependable, your own.
Yeah. And so you need tricks to be able to hone it down into where actually is this.
Where is it really? Yeah.
And then you've got the piece where, you know, people describe it differently. And so the specific things as we've just run through that mean stuff, you know, do you have muscle tightness? That means stuff. Is it stiff? How long is it stiff for? It means stuff. But in certain circumstances, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't mean anything, you know, and or isn't useful to be able to direct us to a specific diagnosis. And so you have to be able to listen pick out the things that mean something or points to a diagnosis and, you know, filter the other things. And when you mix that, so it's nice if you've got someone who's just purely nociceptive pain, but when you mix that with a bit of neuropathic pain and you mix that with nociplastic pain, and the patient's then got brain fog on top of that, they are struggling to describe it. They are struggling to listen. They are struggling to concentrate while we're asking it. So it gets really difficult. So they're some of the challenges. And I think that if you don't have the ability to sort of just work through and have it like, I have a very structured way that I go through and I'll ask a question, the patient may answer a different question for me. I just have to come back and go, okay, where was it again? I know that, like, yeah. And it's funny, like at times I'll ask the question three times and then like their partner will butt in and go, no, sweetheart, what he is asking is, which anyway, that's just
but part of it. They want to tell you something else. Yeah. And there's also that expectation piece of the patient. They've waited months and months for their 20 minutes to tell you how intense it is. And if anything, that component where someone focuses on how bad it is and how high the pain levels are, that's a red flag of central sensitization, right? That's not coping. It's amplified. So even that is information. It's not that this person is a pain and they're focusing on the wrong things. That's what they can focus on because that's where they're at with their pain. And then if you can get that to shrink down and get closer and closer to what's been underlying that. But by the time you get to that point, like I did too with my low back stuff, I think I'm coping because I'm not literally going to jump off a bridge, but I'm not coping anymore. But it's hard to sometimes actually see that yourself as a patient. Yeah. So I think that helps a lot. Yeah.
So the other major challenge that we come into, particularly with nociceptive pain, actually with any type of pain, with nociceptive pain, is my own knowledge base. Okay. So I get to a point at which I don't have a good knowledge base around X, Y, and Z. And so am I good at, arms, legs, and backs? Yes, I do them very well. Am I very good at headaches? No, I'm not. Am I good at facial pain? Facial pain, I refer off to my colleagues who are good at facial pain. And so you get this point at which the challenge becomes the limitation in knowledge base, experience, and then probably skill base. And so, for example, when I was much more junior in this, I would have a diagnosis and I'd make the diagnosis of non-specific lower back pain. So non-specific lower back pain is what I refer to as it's a diagnosis of lack of options. So at that point in time, I had my options were I could take a history, I could do an examination, and I could do some imaging. And we know that if you look at the scientific literature around that, all of those things are really poor for predicting what is causing somebody's pain. Now, as a result, we label it non-specific lower back pain and you farm them off to the physical therapist to do some rehab. And I, did that for hundreds of patients. Then for me, my options expanded. And so my options expanded when I learned how to be able to do diagnostic blocks and then other therapeutic procedures. So for me, if you come and see me with lower back pain, I'm then going to go, okay, can I block the facet joints? Can I block the sacroiliac joints? Can we do discography? Not that I do it very often, but can we block hip joints? Can we then identify what is the underlying source of pain? And as soon as I can identify the underlying source of pain, I can then go on and treat it. And so within back pain for me, there's five major causes of pain: facet joints, sacroiliac joints, hips, discs, nerves. If it's worse in your legs, I'm going to start at nerves. If it's worse in your back, I'm going to split it up. If it's above the belt line, I'll start at facets and discs. If it's below your belt line, I'm going to start at sacroiliac joints and hips. And then once I've worked through that, I'm going to do a diagnostic block. I'm going to see if your pain goes away. And if it does go away, then I'm going to go on to a therapeutic intervention. But the concept of me diagnosing somebody with non-specific lower back pain, I have not done that for over 10 years. So because my diagnostic options are higher. But if you're a physical therapist, if you're a
non-interventive pain physician,
everything stops at history, examination, imaging findings, which are all not very useful.
I'm in a seating issue.
This is ridiculous. We're like really wiggling.
I'm really wiggling. Sorry, I also got stuck in my chair. I'm good, Dan. Don't mind me. Everyone who watches visually always gets a special treat with our episodes.
All right. <Sorry. laughs> So I think that's just some of the challenges just with the simple stuff.
Yeah, in the simple bucket, exactly.
In the simple bucket of pain. And so, you know, moving out of that into neuropathic pain and nociplastic pain is more difficult, unfortunately. But we will do that in coming episodes.
Exactly. Thanks a lot, Dan, for that really great overview around nociceptive pain. Like we said, we're going to come back and dive into the even more complex buckets. But you can see how even under that umbrella, that's where once a physician has unfortunately reached the end of either what they are capable of with their own experience and tools or with the current diagnostic tools, right, with what we have available with those, from then on, it's on the patient and it's in their head. If I can't go any further in narrowing down what's causing this person's pain and what's amplifying this person's pain potentially, right?
Yeah. So the way I see it is I see like we get to a point at which we exceed my knowledge base, my experience, my skill, or our technology, like where our tech's at the moment. Like you can look back over history, the things that we would say, you know, that was non-specific. We don't know what it caused. We used to like say it was due to humans. Well, now we actually have an enormous amount of technology to be able to identify what's causing pain, but not everything. And so that doesn't then mean it's in the patient's head. It just means we don't have the knowledge, skill, experience, or the tech to diagnose it yet. And so that's why this podcast is called It's Not In Your Head.
And the wild thing is it's not even only or limited to chronic pain, right? How many other diseases were considered hysteria in the past? And now they're at least understood and accepted, even if not well understood, or, you know, we don't have cures for them, like functional neurological disorder. So this concept isn't unique to chronic pain. And a lot of chronic pain patients then develop and deal with these other diagnoses, which are equally as much not in your head. It's not any different. So we look forward to getting into more of it with you, and we appreciate you listening to us. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Thanks, Jess. See ya.
Thanks for listening. Clearly, this is a podcast. It's for informational purposes. It's not a consult, medical advice, or the practice of medicine, and it doesn't form a therapeutic relationship. If you feel the information might be useful for your situation, before applying it to yourself or others, you should speak with your doctor or your treating clinician. Do not delay in seeking a diagnosis or treatment, and applying the information is at the listener's own risk.